Welcome to PMPA Speaking of Suppliers podcast. I'm Miles Free, and today we're speaking with Laurent Cross of Boston Centerless. Boston Centerless has been a supplier of precision ground bar stock to our industry since 1958. Welcome, Laurent.
Thank you, Miles. Happy to be here.
So you probably want to talk to us about the technology, about the precision. Your company's all about precision. It's about, the technology and the critical nature of your product. But I have to tell you that I think of your company in a more cultural way. So before we get into the details of your precision and production process, I wonder if you could share with our listeners some of the highlights of your company's history and how you created the culture, how the culture has been created there that's been so successful.
Sure. So like you said, Boston Centerless has been in business since 1958. It was created by Len Tomasi, who was an immigrant from Italy. Started the business on his own with one machine, servicing the industry and growing over time to become kind of the major players in the field in the United States and beyond. The company now is led and has been led by Steve Tomasi, second generation, the son of the founders. He's been the CEO for the last 37 years, so it's been quite a while. And
he doesn't even look that old. Come on.
He really doesn't. Very energetic guy, very passionate about the business, and also very passionate about the culture that he has been establishing over the years. Boston Centerless is a very, very welcoming company. We have it's interesting to see that, a company started by an immigrant has so many diversity in the company. Some of the people that have visited our company will know that we have flags in our manufacturing plant for each of the country of origins of our employees, and we have about 20 flags, 430 employees. That's quite remarkable. So that means 20 or more nationality of origin are represented in our company.
How awesome is that?
Yeah, by my accent, you can hear that I'm one of them.
Yeah, I'll bet the lunchroom's a great place to figure out what's going on.
It's wonderful, and we actually have events, cultural food events where everybody cooks something from the country of origin. It's great. But going along with that, they really created a culture of inclusion, but also a culture of excellence, of teamwork, of initiative, and really, really pushing everybody to try to be the best they can and working as a team on a daily basis. And it's not just something that we put on our website or we include in brochures. We live and breathe it. Steve has been able to actually include this in almost everything that we do, from hiring to corporate events to meetings that we have with our employees, from daily huddles to weekly meetings to management meetings. We always bring that up, that the BC way, we call it. It's our core values along with our service vision. And that service vision is not just how we interact with our customers outside the organization, but also within the organization.
A lot of companies, I think, miss that idea that we have internal customers too. And I pity the plant manager that thinks that the scale or the shipping area is the finish line, because that's just not the case.
Exactly. We're really looking at this way, that everybody has an internal customer, whether you're working on a machine or you're in maintenance or any of those supporting functions, all serve somebody. And every time that we do a little better than what expected from us, it results in great things for the overall business. And we're seeing it on a daily basis. It's pretty amazing.
Absolutely. Highest and best use is one of my pet concepts, and your commitment to getting everybody to perform at their best is certainly aligned with that. So, Laurent, your company's quality and culture and process discipline has been recognized in the Shigeo Shingo Silver Award. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Early on, it was clear that we needed to ensure the quality and consistency of our products. So we embarked on a lean journey, a lot of lean activities that ended up resulting in pretty extraordinary results. We're a very, very lean organization. And yes, we've been recognized by this Shingo Award years ago, and we continue to get accolades for execution from different institutions and organizations. That allows us to really bring in not only the maximum quality that we can get, so that we pride ourselves to be one of the, if not the supplier that provides the best quality in the industry. But the most important is that we're able to actually bring it to our customers on a consistent manner. And it's really important for us because we're trying to help our customers get rid of some non-value-added processes in their machining operations. And you can only do this if you're going to build your processes around the quality of the products. You can only do this if you know that those products are going to be perfect 100% of the time, or as close as possible to 100% of the time. And as a matter of fact, we know that our customers receive the product that they want, the quality they want, in the time they want, 98% of the time or better. And that has been consistent for years now. And that's a big part of our success.
Well, precision, it really matters. I like to use the phrase human safety, critical human safety components. Tanya DeSalvo uses the phrase can't fail industries. She serves can't fail industries. She makes medical implants like bone screws and such. And, the applications for your high value product, high precision product, talk about some of those can't fail human safety critical applications, if you will.
Yes, a lot of our customers evolve in industries such as you mentioned, medical implant, medical instruments, aerospace. The space industry is a growing segment for us as well, where the quality of the parts that those manufacturers produce is absolutely critical to the programs that they are part of. And that goes back, that traces back to the material that they're sourcing, but also to the quality of the product that they receive and that they're able to use to actually produce those parts. And for that reason, we've tried to offer those customers as much as possible a lot of insurances around the product. We don't manufacture the product. We purchase it from mills, obviously. So we have many sources for material that we're purchasing. Sometimes from distribution for smaller areas. But what our customers are looking for, they're looking for absolute insurance that their material is going to be conformant. And they're looking for tight tolerances so that they can produce the best tolerance possible on their parts. They're looking possibly for value-added services such as UT testing, internal defect detection, things like that, that mills not necessarily can produce for them. So we kind of we are the cornerstone of what customer wants and what they can get from some other players in the industry.
So it's not just about product provision, but it it really is about product validation and confidence that the material does in fact conform and will perform. And it's not just dimensions, it's the entire product provision.
Exactly. So that's why, you know, we call ourselves a value-added distributor, because we have the ability to tell customers, instead of purchasing material directly from a mill and then trying to send it to labs to make sure that the material is conformant and that there is no issues within the material, and then sending it to a heat treater and doing things like this, we bring all of these in-house so that they have one-stop shop. They place one PO, they have the insurance that the material that's going to be purchased is going to be validated by us. It's going to be ground to the tolerance that they request, and then other services that we can offer to them, obviously, you know, that not necessarily larger entities can offer. We can do smaller lots, and we can offer supply chain services to them as well.
Well, that's really important and is one of the next things I wanted to talk about, because high precision and conformance to specifications, I think we've kind of been spoiled that we just expect material to be zero defects and comply with the terms of the order, but it doesn't matter how good or how bad the material is if you can't get it. And we've just been through a year or two of really disrupted supply chain events. And our members have done yeoman duty. They've really stepped up and been there for their customers with changing forecasts, changing orders, changing requirements, trying to help their customers adjust to the inability to grab some material. So we're making parts as needed, not as forecast. And obviously we can't make those parts if we can't find it. So how did your company weather this supply chain crisis, and how did you commit to keeping material in stock?
Yeah, it's really several prongs on this. During the pandemic, there was a strong propensity from some customers and some suppliers to reduce their inventory, because there was a lot of uncertainty in the market. People didn't know what was going to happen. Keeping large inventory was somewhat seen as potentially problematic if the economy was not going to recover at some point. We were fortunate enough to take advantage of the government help during that time, the PPEs and all that, and we used it for the right thing. We used it to keep our people, but also keep a critical mass of material, and we kept our orders in place with the mills. I really praise Steve Tomasi for that vision, because at that time, nobody had visibility of what was going on, but that allowed us to get out of the pandemic with a better position than a lot of our competitors and fellow suppliers in the industry. We had stock. We actually started quickly increasing stock, increasing our orders to mills. And when we saw that, you know, the disruption with some of the larger mills who had reduced their production, and let go of some of their critical employees, you know, we saw those lead times start to expand. We were in a position where we were already in the queue, and we were able to actually help our customers. That's the first thing that we did. So, you know, what do you do when the lead times extend? If you want to be a buffer and be able to actually help customers, we're in the middle between those mills and those customers. You increase your stock. So we dramatically increase the amount of inventory that we keep on hand. The other thing that we did is that we tried to, as much as possible, be proactive with our main customers in giving them visibility of what we knew and the knowledge that we had of the industry, which I think is critical, because we have relationship with, you know, hundreds of suppliers. That's not necessarily the case for everybody in the industry. We were able to actually go to them proactively and telling them, place new orders now if you don't want to run out of material. And I think that we gained a lot of goodwill doing this with customers that didn't necessarily have the visibility that, you know, that Cliff was coming so close to them, and we gave that to them. So I think this is how we were able to be more of a resource during that critical time. And we did gain quite a lot of partnership and new customers coming to us as well, when they heard that, you know, we were able to actually help them out.
Well, when you can reduce customers' uncertainty, when you can proactively communicate and help them get ahead of the rapids, the volatility ahead, I mean, that's just ideal for building a long-term sustainable relationship. I know that you have documented processes, you're training on those processes, you're recognized for your consistency of your processes and your deliverables, and your company just completed the build out and deployment of a new operation. And there's nothing about building out and deploying a new operation that one can say is a previously existing process. So how does a culture that is so consistent and repeatable deal with the challenges of something so opposite in terms of haven't been there before?
That's a very good question. And that's been the topic of many, many discussions here in the ways that we were going to expand without diluting, one, our culture, and two, the quality of our products. You know, we recognize in the industry for the quality and consistency, like I was saying, and the big risk in opening a secondary operation is to create a difference in perception of quality or customer service, deliverables. So we had to make sure that this would be totally transparent to customers and that they wouldn't be able to tell the difference between a product that had been produced in one plant or the other. And the way to do this is really we were able to do it because we already had in place quite a lot of very robust training processes. And what we did is we took our time. We opened the plant over there. We used the same processes. We used the same machines. We used, you know, a lot of the exact same things, same training procedures, everything.
Laurent, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you provide material to Intel? Is Intel one of your direct customers? The reason I ask is Intel famously had a policy when they'd build a new chip fab called copy exactly. And they would go, as you said, the same equipment, the same procedures, the same training. They took it right down to the same supplier of bottled gas because there just may be some trace element that's actually involved. And it sounds like you took a page right out of that Intel copy exactly playbook.
Yes, correct. They're not a direct customer, but yes, this is absolutely the idea. One of the things that we've done as well is we invested in some cutting-edge technology to be able to train employees remotely from one plant to the other. And we did this because the opening of that secondary plant is not the end of what we are looking to do in terms of expansion geographically. And so it's important for us to be able to replicate that exactly in different areas. The force that we have, I think that, you know, we were talking about the diversity. One of the issues in Massachusetts is that, you know, there's a lot of manufacturing. It's a very dense area. So finding skilled technicians can be sometimes a little difficult. The pool is limited. And we have been innovative in the way we're training people. We're hiring people from a lot of different backgrounds of diversity. Sometimes we hire people that don't speak English. Actually, many times we do, you know, people from diverse ethnic groups, you know, that not necessarily know the language. And we teach them everything from scratch. We even teach them English in here. But what that allowed us to do is that really create a very strong training program for those people that really have never seen a machine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we hire on attitude and culture fit, you know, people that want to work hard, that are willing to actually spend the time making sure, measuring bars and being precise and doing this consistently, then we train them all the techniques. And those techniques we were able to actually put in our training programs, and with those cutting-edge technology, actually use it to actually train people hundreds of miles away, exactly so they can look at exactly the same things that a trainer would teach to a new employee in Woburn.
So the that focus on training and really facilitating, making it easy to be trained, and having that high requirement for consistency, that makes a lot of sense. So we've covered the cultural side of your company, I think, pretty well. And I think it's real easy to say, well, Boston Centerless, they provide AccuRound, you know, precision ground bar, centerless ground bar. But I think our listeners would really be interested to know in some of the other products or approaches or ways your company adds value. And so I wonder if you'd like to, describe your AccuRound process and then look at some of the other services that our listeners can get from Boston Centerless.
Sure. Boston Centerless, provides, like you said, AccuRound is our main division. And what AccuRound means is that we are providing the material as well as all the value-added services that go around producing the exact material that the customer is looking for. So obviously, grinding is one of them. So grinding to extremely tight tolerances, we can grind 12-foot bars down to about 40 millionths tolerance.
40 millionths. I don't even want to know how many slices of a human hair that is. That's pretty doggone thin. Okay.
Yeah, and then roundness to 20 million. So, but on a day-to-day basis, we are producing material that is within, one-tenth of a thousandth of an inch, very consistently.
And that's not, by the way, let's talk. That's not just, carbon and alloy steel or stainless steel. You are doing this across a wide variety of materials and grades and treatments, right? Heat treated, stress relief, all these different forms and formats of these different materials as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, our niche obviously is special alloys, stainless, titanium, medical alloys, but we offer all kinds of different material. We go from aluminum to red metals, coppers, copper, brass. We even grind plastics. We have quite a lot of customers looking for plastics such as, PEEK and, PTFE or nylon, and we can grind that, on our same machines with the same techniques.
Yeah, that's crazy to this steel guy, because I just think the wheel would clog and load up, and so that's pretty amazing. So, what other kinds of services can you provide?
Yeah, so as much as possible, like I was saying before, we try to be a one-stop shop to our customers. The idea is that for us, looking at our customer base, for them to purchase material and send it out for grinding and, getting all this heat treatment, lab requirements, all of that are different POs, shipping, receiving, all that stuff is completely, non-value-added processes for them. So we want to be able to offer them as much as possible. So over time, we have brought in as much capability as possible in-house to be able to do this. And when we can do it in-house, we actually built a network of suppliers that that allows us to actually respond to customer needs. So today, customers can request material, obviously, all these different types of material, and sometimes, even things that, we haven't heard from, we're able to source. But we can do in-house. We can chamfer them. I said grinding, obviously, laser marking. We were talking about UT testing, eddy current testing. we are actually bringing new equipment within the organization right now for additional quality testing. So pretty soon we'll be able to do tensile strength testing in-house. We mm-hmm. actually have the machine. Hardness testing, obviously. All of that is designed to actually reduce lead time as well. So, you know, today, if a customer sends us material that needs to be heat treated, you know, we have to send it to a heat treater. We don't heat treat in-house because it's a completely different process. But, you know, then when we receive it back, we need to send a sample to a lab to test, you know, hardness and tensile strength. We'll be able to do this in-house. That will reduce our lead time by about 2 weeks.
2 weeks is that's
exactly
that's make or break an order sometimes.
Absolutely, and then, you know, that can also provide our customers with the ability to get the order for their customers. So that's what we're trying to do. And then the big part of what we do as well is supply chain services, and that's one of the main reasons why we opened the secondary plant. Is we've been doing this in Massachusetts for decades, but we are able to offer customers with a variety of supply chain services, such as blanket orders, obviously, where they place large orders and we supply it with multiple releases throughout the duration, where they're able to actually lock the price of the base material and we do deliveries as they need it. But we also do Kanban orders, where, you know, people that have a good visibility of when they're going to need material can get, you know, scheduled deliveries. We stock finished good material in different areas of the country. Obviously, we do it here. We have distribution centers in the United States where we're able to actually hold finished good material and deliver next day just in time to customers, sometimes right to their machines. This is something that, you know, we're trying to do to be even more responsive to customers, and where they don't have to actually keep the stock on hand, we can actually keep it for them and they can count on us to deliver it at the time that they need it.
Well, anything that can minimize lead time for a customer improves their ability to serve their customer, and it's ultimately that customer demand that's responsible for all of us working. So you can provide more metals than your own product, right? So if someone needed tube or wire or some other thing, and you've been working with them on this Kanban or just in time, you could also be a source for other materials, right?
Absolutely. Yes, we do a lot of that. Wire is a big area. We have a lot of customers that use wire that we grind or not.
How do you grind wire?
Yeah, it's you know, it's interesting. It's interesting, but it's basically the same process. You know, there's obviously a limitation to the diameter we can get down to, but you know, we can grind down to about, you know, 8/1000ths of an inch in diameter in our process.
That's heavy card. That's like cover stock, folks.
Yes. Yeah. So, and that's, you know, something that we do quite often. Tubing is another example. We are able for some customers to provide some, different things, flats and things like that. Although it's not really our niche. You know, we really are, and we try to stay, focused on what we are really good at. So, you know, we really want to be a mile deep and inches wide rather than the opposite. We are a round bar manufacturer, but we can, you know, so anything that's round is really in our wheelhouse. Tubing is fine, you know, grinding a tube or grinding a bar is about the same. So we can provide that. And then, you know, for some customers, we can go out and source some material that we're not necessarily going to provide any value-added services to, but we can actually distribute for them.
Well, I think reducing complexity in the office and in procurement can make a lot of sense as well. And really, as you said, the confidence that Stephen had to continue to keep orders, maintain stock when we came through the pandemic and then run ahead of the kind of like the bow wave, right? Run ahead of the mills in terms of keeping your place in the queue. It has really helped our members to serve their customers because they know they can get material. I guess that wraps up my questions. Is there anything that I failed to ask, Laurent, that you think we should have covered?
No, I think this is up. Our goal and our core purpose is to be a role model for U.S. manufacturing. And I think that, everything that we do in terms of supporting the industry is geared towards that. So, we try to be as exemplary as possible in the way we conduct ourselves, but also in the way we manufacture our products. And when we talk to customers, we try to really help them to continue this vision and provide them with this product that is a great start for them to achieve the same results in their environment. So, all of this offering and all these products and the culture and all that, all of this is to support this vision. It's been very successful for us. We continue to push for that. And we're going to continue in the years to come.
Well, I think it's a great approach. I remember Isaac Newton, a quote when I was in school, he said, if I could see further than others, it's because I stood on the shoulders of giants. And that's exactly what our machine shops are counting on getting material that is, in fact, true dimensional, true grade, true straightness, true in terms of out around. And if we start with good material, it just reduces the variability that can crop up in our shop. So we thank you for that, that commitment to quality, to precision, and to being an exemplary manufacturer. Thank you so much for joining us, Laura.
Thank you, Miles, for having me. I appreciate the time.